In this hour, please be joined by Carl Hart, chair of the Columbia University Psychology Department, who is back with his latest research into what he calls drug use by grown-ups. You might have seen the news yesterday that the Biden administration is moving to reclassify marijuana and ease restrictions, hence the song from Rick James. So the timing of this conversation with Carl Hart could not be more propitious. It's been a long time, Carl Hart. How are you, sir?
Good to hear from you, Tavis. Nice to speak with you as always, man.
Man, it's good to hear your voice. Good to hear your voice. Let me start with this. I don't mean to make you political, and you can push back any way you want. And so I'm not even asking about the protest. What I'm asking about is being in that environment. I mean, Columbia, where you hold forth every day in the psychology department, is in the news every single day. Like, what's it like just walking around the campus these days over there?
Yo, it's funny that you say you don't mean to make me political. I'm black in America. Come on, don't get it twisted.
Fair enough. I used to want to put up on you. Some people. I was just talking to Larry Wilmore about what it means to be a citizen artist, and there are some artists who really don't want to engage as a citizen publicly, and there are some professors, some academics who will shy away from that as well. So I try to be respectful of people and let them run in the lane they want to run in. That's why I ask it broadly about what it's like being on the campus, but take it anywhere you want to take it, and we'll jump into the drug thing a little bit later.
Yeah, man. You talk about the situation on campus. The other day, I was coming on campus. I couldn't even get on campus because of this, that new augmented security detail that our feckless president has called in or got us into this sort of mess with her awful performance before Congress. And so we have this heightened security on campus. And then, you know, being a black man, who kind of know your rights and say, hey, yo, I demand to be treated better than that. And then now you got a confrontation with these security people. And so that's happened to me the other day. And then that's me, a tenured professor. So you know what it's like for our black students, black male students especially. So, yeah, man, it's I'm writing letters and I'm doing all the activist stuff that any responsible middle class person should be doing. So I'm not happy about this situation.
Yep. What does it feel like in 2024? How do you process? I'm glad you survived whatever that confrontation was. And I say that seriously because we see far too often when black men end up in confrontation with the police, even if you are a tenured professor and chair of the department at Columbia, you still could end up dead. It happens far, far too often, as we all know in this country. But what does it feel like? How does one process being a tenured professor in the Ivy League and having to have a run-in with cops yourself on your own campus?
Well, I'm no longer chair. I stepped down from chair. I got tired of serving the plantation. So just to be clear, but I am tenured and I am a chair professor, meaning that I have endowed research funds for as long as I am here at Columbia. And so having that rank, it doesn't mean anything outside of my office when you're in the United States. And I know that. And at some level, I'm kind of glad that I experienced the same thing that everyday black people experience. So I don't forget to make sure that I stand up on behalf of those who are not tenured professors. And so when you talk about this issue of oftentimes there be black guys who don't walk away from those interactions, certainly intact. I got three sons, you know, all over 20. And so that's why it's imperative for me to stand up, call it out, and make as much noise about it as possible to treat these folks, or everybody, just like any other human being.
If you have three sons in their 20s, that means you've done the talk, what, three times already?
Nah, you know, I don't do that. Well, I don't do the talk of the nation talk about, you know. The talk that I have with my kids is that, you know, your responsibility is to stand up on behalf of everybody else, particularly those who can't stand up for themselves, no matter who they are, particularly when their humanity is being called into question for irrelevant reasons. And so that talk that the nation talks about, I don't do that per se, because I think that reinforces this nonsense that somehow our black men should be expected to be treated less than. So I don't do the talk. Mm-hmm. Just stand up when it happens.
Nope, I receive that, and I respect that. More importantly, just getting started with Carl Hart, former chair of the Columbia University Psychology Department, but tenured nonetheless. And his research will be funded for as long as he's at Columbia, and he's doing some amazing research, has for years. And so I wanted him back on to get the latest on his research into what he calls drug use by grown ups. I mentioned moments ago, and you may have heard the news yesterday that the Biden administration has now moved to reclassify marijuana and to ease restrictions. That news came yesterday. What's happening right now, literally as I speak on this live program, is that the Senate is taking up legislation right now. Schumer and other Democratic senators have already filed a bill to federally legalize marijuana. That's underway even as we speak. And before I jump to that, though, I want to just do a quick follow-up when we come forward. Carl Hart, and I heard it, you heard it, it didn't slide by me. He made reference to the president of Colombia, and he offered his own critique of his president, who he is not fond of or a fan of in this particular moment. But he made reference back to those hearings where those college professors sort of got embarrassed and humiliated, and it cost some of them their jobs at Harvard and at UPenn. I wonder, and I think this is what Carl Hart may have been saying, but I want to probe this. I wonder whether or not he thinks that this aggressive crackdown, and thus my term, he can frame it his own way, but this aggressive response, this crackdown with calling in cops on these campuses has to do with that hearing. You take my point, right? And if you don't, we'll explain it when we come forward. You're listening to Carl Hart on Tavis Smiley.
You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
Tavis Smiley.
Ranked number 45 on the Heavy 100 list of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America. Ready to re-examine your assumptions and expand your inventory of ideas? More of Tavis Smiley coming your way right now.
More of Carl Hart coming your way right now. Columbia University psychology professor, who I'm honored to have back on this program, given the news of yesterday and today. About the Biden administration now wanting to reclassify marijuana and ease restrictions, and literally what's going on in the Senate right now with Chuck Schumer and other Democratic senators filing a bill to federally legalize marijuana. We'll get to that part, as they say, in just a moment. But one final question. He's on the campus of Columbia, in case you've just tuned in. And you all know, literally as we speak right now, they've been arresting people on the campus of UCLA. It's all kind of news in L.A., at University of Texas. I mean, all across the country. Thousands now of students have been arrested or detained. Columbia has said that they are now going to expel any student that participated in the takeover of that particular building on the campus, where windows were broken, we are told, et cetera, et cetera. They're going to expel students there. So this story is continuing across the country as these students express themselves on these campuses regarding the Biden policy. And what's happening, of course, in this Israel-Hamas war, as you well know. But Carl made a point a moment ago. I should call him Professor Hart, Dr. Hart. He's my friend, so I call him Carl, but I don't mean any disrespect by that. But he made a point a moment ago that I want to come back to right quick, and that is I thought he subtly made a connection between what we're seeing on these campuses now regarding this aggressive response, these law enforcement officers being called in and cracking down on students. There may be a connection between the response that we're getting now and the hearings that happened some months ago where these college presidents, for lack of a better phrase, took it on the chin. I believe that they missed a moment for moral clarity, even as I also believe that they were set up and they were exploited in that moment. I think both of those things are true. That's my sense. But Carl, did I take your point that you were connecting the response to those hearings?
Yeah, Stavis, I mean, there's no one better to talk about this than you. So you hit it on the head. I just want to say, in terms of our president and a couple of board members, board of trustees that she took with her for her testimony, and they helped prep her. Now, what happened before her testimony was the testimony of the president at Harvard and Penn. Subsequent to their testimony, both of them were kind of forced to resign. And so our president was determined not to let that happen to her. In her determination, what she did was capitulated. She copped to everything that Congress accused her and the faculty of. She copped to things that weren't even infractions, for example, and she sold out faculty members. But more importantly, she sold out the principles, the ones that we really value in academia, particularly academic freedom. So people engaged in academic freedom, she allowed Congress to bully her into saying that people don't have academic freedom, essentially. And she agreed, and she sold us out. And as a result, she promised to crack down on at Columbia. And when she left the hearing, she went straight to a D.C. Law office and called the cops on campus like her name was Karen. and we see the result. We our campus has been militarized. And last night, additional students were arrested, just unprecedented, arrested for protesting, things that we encourage on our campus. We want our students to be plugged into their world, and we want them to protest when they think that things are, when injustices occur. And then we can have dialogue, discussion, debate. But what happened at Congress was that everything, even the saying something like, by any means necessary, was deemed anti-Semitic. And this is ridiculous. I mean, that's the kind of thing that happened during that hearing.
Yeah. I've always known Carl Hart, for all the years I've known him, to be a truth teller, but I'm kind of chuckling on the inside because it's good to have tenure. It is good to have tenure because, again, he's a truth teller.
Let's be clear. You know, it's not tenure. This is my conscience, man.
My heroes were people
like James Baldwin, Malcolm X. And, you know, people today seem to think that when you stand up against injustice, there is no risk. There are still risks to me. Mm-hmm. There are all kinds of risks to me. But the point is, I can't look in the mirror. I can't face my children if I don't stand up for what I think is right.
No, I received that, and I meant no offense by it. I was being somewhat tongue-in-cheek. That's why I started by saying I've always known you to be a truth teller, and in the tradition of those august individuals you just named, I respect that. But it's fascinating to listen to an academic on a campus be as forceful and as truthful as you are about your own president. And I respect the transparency is all I was pushing toward. I respect the transparency. Let me just ask you this, and we'll move on. Do you think in this moment that your president has now, how do I want to phrase this, that she has now pushed back hard enough that she is now engaged in enough appeasement that she will, even beyond this moment, survive as president of Columbia?
No, I don't think she will survive. Certainly, I will make my opinion clear. Many of our faculty are upset that this person would call the cops on our students for engaging in behavior in which we encourage. And she sold us out. I mean, she sold out our principles. And so I don't think she'll survive. But, you know, I've been wrong with my predictions, but I would still do everything I can to make sure that she doesn't.
A lot of this, as you well know, is about money. It always is. It's always about those funders and those sponsors and those alums who contribute, Robert Kraft being one of the more famous ones who pulled his money out of Columbia over his critique of these protests. What's your sense of how she and other presidents are responding to those donors?
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head again. This is about money. I don't know the extent to which these people are financially invested, but my apartment is right across the street from the Kraft Center at Columbia. And so I know a little something about that. And then, you know, it's a place where Jewish folks go live, and it's a beautiful thing, actually. And I'll do whatever I can to protect anybody against any type of discrimination, including anti-Semitic behavior. But what they are defining as anti-Semitic behavior is really people just being upset or uncomfortable about some idiotic thing that somebody might have said. Shit that I face every day, you know. So it but you just keep it moving.
Yeah. Let me ask you this again. I'm trying to pivot to this marijuana story, which we'll get to in a second. I promise. That's why it's good to have an hour to sort of unpack these particular issues. But again, I'm following you as I always do, and you made a powerful point that I want to give you a chance to unpack a bit further for me. I was just reading an article, actually a number of articles over the last few days are starting to pop up, obviously, about what makes a protest anti-Semitic. You've given some fine examples, or depending on how one looks at it, some bad examples of language that has now been deemed anti-Semitic. Malcolm's line, by any means necessary, is now being deemed anti-Semitic. And so my question is not so much putting upon you to respond to what makes a protest anti-Semitic. That's what universities have to figure out. The broader question for me is how, in a moment like this, can we even have an earnest conversation about anti-Semitism?
It doesn't seem like the goal is to actually have a conversation about the behavior that which concerns us. I mean, we all find it abhorrent for someone to be discriminated based on their religion or whatever. And so that's a very real thing. But what's happening here is not that. What's happening here, certainly in our protests on our campus, people are protesting what they consider genocide of the Palestinian people by the Israeli government, not by the Jewish religion, but by the Israeli government, just like those people criticize the American government. And so to criticize a government doesn't mean that you're anti-Semitic, but that's what is being conflated here. And I think is being conflated intentionally so we don't have a real conversation.
Final question here. And this is philosophical, I admit, but it's worth wrestling with, not just in these few minutes, but beyond this hour, beyond this program, in the days ahead. This is serious stuff in the body politic of America right now. And that is this notion of shutting down protest. I think Carl Hart and I are simpatico in this regard, that if people say outrageous things, they ought to be checked. That ought not to be condoned. As I said a moment ago, I think these college presidents, frankly, missed a moment for moral clarity when they testified before Congress. Both of these things are true, that there are knuckleheads in any protest who say and do stupid things. And by the way, that's on both sides. It's on the pro-Israeli side and the pro-Palestinian side. You got knuckleheads who will say things that are clearly beyond the pale. But that is a far different issue, far cry from shutting down legitimate protest, which, as Professor Hart said a moment ago, is what we encourage students to do, to express themselves, to use their freedom of speech, to be engaged as citizens. And so my broader concern, Carl Hart, is this broad swath, this broad brush that we're using to just shut down protest, period, on college campuses. That troubles me in ways I can't even describe, sir.
Yeah, me too. You know, as you know, active debate, lively debate, and discussion is the lifeblood of what we do in academia, particularly in a place like Columbia. And then so now when you are talking about making sure that people can't have those discussions, what is the point of being here? And so that's the thing that really concerns me. That's why I encourage my students, you know, to engage in debate, you know, critique people's argument, not people's persons, but their arguments. And that's what we teach in this space.
Yep. One final point here. You and I agree, I think, in theory, about the wrongheaded nature of the way these college presidents have handled many of these protests. But it is also true that they took over a building. That is trespassing. Windows were broken, et cetera, et cetera. What say you about where we do draw a line? Because that's what the president and others are saying, that you can't do that. That is wrong, and that will get you expelled.
Oh, okay, let's think about, I just think about all the protests and riots. I'm from Miami. The one that I think about most clearly is after McDuffie was killed in 1980 and the police killed him and beat him and the coroner, a medical examiner came out and pointed this out. Then the police were acquitted and our city exploded. And so people were saying, why are they burning buildings? Why are they doing this? As Dr. King said, you know, protest is the language of the powerless, essentially. People, when they have no power, when the power structure is not listening to them, as our administration engaged in the discussion with students in less than good faith, this is what happened. Again, if we learn the lessons of previous protests, riots, and so forth, we would understand what's happening. Instead, the mainstream media certainly goes to that frame and say they took over the building. And it's like, what options do people have? You know, obviously, I don't want them to take over the building. I'd like to have our university just run like it's supposed to. But when you take away power from people in the face of an injustice that we all know, what do you expect?
Yeah, yeah. No, you're right about that. That is a famous quote from King, that riots and protests are the language of the unheard. King was right about it in the 60s, and he'd be right about it today were he here. And the other thing that troubles me, this is my own commentary, we'll move forward and talk about the news of the day regarding the reclassification of marijuana, what's going on right now in the Senate as we speak even. But I've been noticing on the mainstream networks, just talking to Larry Wilmer earlier, and he had a critique, a strong critique of CNN and even NBC back in the day when Jeff Zucker was running it, about the ways in which we helped to create this monster called Donald Trump. But the mainstream media gets on these narratives and they buy into this language. You've heard me critique the mainstream media's use of the word spoiler. Cornel West is not a spoiler. Bobby Kennedy is not a spoiler. They have a right to run. You can agree or disagree, vote for them, vote against them, whatever. But if you're 35 and you're an American citizen, you can run. That does not make you a spoiler. Republicans don't call Democrats spoilers when they lose to them, and it doesn't happen in the reverse. But only independent candidates are spoilers. But the media grabs a hold of this bankrupt language sometimes, and they run with it. I've been noticing, and I want you to notice now, how the mainstream media is using the term outside agitators. They're all using it. MSNBC, CNN, that's their new phraseology. These outside agitators. What happened to students? What happened to students raising their voices? Now everybody in these protests is an outside agitator. You heard it here first. Pay attention to it for yourself. When we come forward, the breaking news happening in the Senate right now is Chuck Schumer and other Democratic senators have filed a bill to federally legalize marijuana. We got a sense of this yesterday when the news broke that the Biden administration was going to move to reclassify it and to ease restrictions. More about that part with Carl Hart when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.
Seeking the truth, speaking the truth. This is the Tavis Smiley Show. Who do you trust to get at the truth? Tavis Smiley. That's who. The conversation continues right now.
It does indeed. I'm glad to have Carl Hart of Columbia University on this program. He's been awfully kind for the first half hour of this hour to indulge my questions about life these days on a college campus, namely the one where he holds forth every day in New York City, Columbia. But what's happening there is happening on campuses all across the country. You're following these stories as much as I am, but it's good to hear directly from one who has to navigate this stuff every day just to get to his office. So I appreciate and thank Professor Carl Hart for indulging again those questions. Now, to the stuff that I really wanted him on to talk about today, the marijuana story, the drug story. So the Biden administration gave us a hint yesterday that they were going to become more aggressive in moving to reclassify marijuana to ease restrictions. And now, again, as we speak, Chuck Schumer and other Democratic senators have now filed a bill to federally legalize marijuana. There are all kinds of questions I can ask about this and will in a moment, but I start with just a broad question, Carl Hart. What do you make of all this marijuana movement?
Hey, Tavis, I will say quickly, and then I have to go into a meeting about this whole president thing. But in terms of the cannabis thing, you pointed out that my book was it's actually called Drug Use for Grownups. It's my latest book. And what it is, it's a summary of my 30-year research career in which we brought people or bring people into the lab and actually give them drugs like cannabis and study the effects for medical reasons, for treating addiction, to find out what these drugs do. And so we and others have built up an impressive human database on the effects of cannabis for medicine, and that's essentially what the Biden administration is recommending, that smoked cannabis can now be used as a medicine at the federal level. This would be a new move, but as I point out in my book, and I want people to understand that our federal government has been supplying a select group of patients with cannabis since 1978. So this isn't new. It's only new to people who haven't really followed. And it only points out the hypocrisy. On the one hand, our government has been giving this for a medical reason since 1978, but then on the other hand, telling the population that this is not medicine, this is an awful drug. And so it points out the hypocrisy, and I talk about these things in my book. Over my 30-year career, I talk about all of this data, and I try and do it in an interesting way. So I hope people check out the book, and this is not surprising, but I want people to really understand this. The major point here is that if your government has lied to you about cannabis, what else have they lied to you about? And that's the question that the book kind of interrogates.
Yep. I know you got to run here in a couple minutes. Let me ask a couple more follow-ups. I'll let you go here. That's a strong indictment, and I'm not saying you're wrong about it, but it's a strong indictment to say the government has lied to us about cannabis. What's the point of lying to us all these years?
Well, the point of lying to you all these years, it's important for people to understand that every year in the United States, we spend $40 billion a year on this thing we call the war on drugs. And that means that a lot of different governmental agencies, people who are not in the government, they get government grants for this sort of war on drugs. In order to have a war on drugs, you have to arrest people for drugs. Cannabis arrests constituted the vast majority of annual drug arrests. We arrested nearly a million people a year for cannabis alone. This is just for possession. And now we have to find a new drug to vilify to make sure we continue to arrest people and keep this $40 billion industry going. That's the main reason. That's in short. But please check out the book. I talk about other reasons as well.
Okay. Final question here. Why do you think all of this is happening now? I hear your indictment of the way they've lied for decades. But why do you think this movement to ease access is happening in this present moment?
Well, it's happening with cannabis right now because 24 states have legalized cannabis for recreational purposes. And this has been going on since 2012. And those states have not fallen apart, as was predicted by the government. And so now you can no longer lie because people are seeing the evidence. So as more people have experience with cannabis, they understand that those stories that were told beginning in the 1930s by the racist Bureau of Narcotics Chief Harry Anslinger, that when you take the cannabis, you kill your mother. And he went after people like Billie Holiday, Louis Armstrong, and so forth. Now we know those stories can't hold up in the face of people's own evidence, too. And so you move marijuana out of that category, and now you vilify something else. And that's what happens, and that keeps this thing going.
Carl Hart has to run to get to a meeting. We were talking earlier in this hour about what's happening on Columbia's campus. He is outspoken about this and is being called into a meeting now on the campus about what the future will be of these protests and the future of the presidency, for that matter. Carl Hart, congrats on the new book. Good to have you on the program. We'll talk down the road, brother. I'll let you run now.
Take care, Tabitha. Thank you.
Good to have you on the program. In case you've just tuned in, one of the reasons why we were in this conversation again is because the Biden administration gave us a heads up yesterday that they were going to move to ease restrictions on marijuana access and possession, essentially moving to reclassify marijuana. So that news came yesterday. And today, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Senate Finance Committee Chair Ron Wyden, and Senator Cory Booker out of New Jersey, and a coalition of other Democratic senators introduced officially a bill to federally legalize marijuana. This comes the day after the Justice Department announced again that it is moving to reschedule cannabis in a historic policy shift. The bill is largely identical. The one they introduced today is largely identical to an earlier version the senators introduced back in 2022. Some minor language tweaks. But I just asked Carl Hart, as you heard a moment ago, why he thinks all of this is happening now. You heard his response. I need not repeat that. But for all the years I've been in talk radio and for all the years I've been in media broadly, TV and radio and print, this debate is waged forever about whether or not and when we will or should legalize marijuana in this country. States have done it, and that's a big deal. But now the federal government has gotten more serious. The Biden administration is behind it. So we will see in the coming days what actually happens. But at least these Democratic senators have filed a bill once again to federally legalize marijuana. There you have it. More of Tavis Smiley when we come forward.
Hope, agency, dignity. This is Tavis Smiley.
Can you dig it?
Come on!
Smart talk for curious people just like you. You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
We thank Carl Hart of Columbia for the time he gave us today to talk about what's happening on that campus and his book and this move that we see in the country right now, certainly in Washington, that Chuck Schumer and other Democratic senators are advancing to finally federally legalized marijuana. You can rest assured there'll be a lot of conversation about that today and in the days ahead as to whether or not America's going to hell in a handbasket when people start advancing this kind of legislation. And of course, on the other side, there'll be a great deal of conversation, I'm sure, on this show and on my home station and other stations across the country in the media writ large about what this means specifically for African Americans. There's always an angle on this, right? There's a black angle to everything, and race plays a part of everything in this country, as Johnny Cochran once famously said. So there's also the conversation to be had about the impact this will now have on African Americans. As you well know, black folk are the disproportionate number of persons who sit in prisons right now for drug possession, for drug selling. And as states across the country have moved to legalize marijuana, the federal government has been, at a standstill, as it were. Legislation, as I mentioned moments ago, was introduced in 2022 that didn't go anywhere. But when the president came out yesterday and said that his administration, the Department of Justice, was going to move to reclassify it and to make things easier, the Senate did not waste any time. Again, Chuck Schumer and Democrats now debating this bill that has been introduced to federally legalize marijuana. So we'll see about that in the days to come. Speaking of Congress, there is other breaking news at this hour. The House, no surprise here, but the House is back in turmoil once again. Marjorie Taylor Greene has made her move. She's been threatening this for quite a while now, but she's made her move officially to oust the Speaker, Mike Johnson. Let me read now the first few paragraphs of a story from USA Today that I have in my hands. A conservative firebrand, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, Republican of Georgia, said today that she's calling up a vote next week to oust House Speaker Mike Johnson, Republican of Louisiana, setting up a high-stakes clash inside her own party and where Democrats are vowing to help avoid another lengthy vacancy in the job. That is second in line, of course, of succession to the presidency. Greene's move is unlikely to succeed, says USA Today, but still is uncertain. It still is certain, rather, to royal internal GOP tension as she continues to target Johnson, the most powerful elected Republican, of course, in our country. Johnson, for his point, has been defiant in the face of this existential threat to his speakership, saying that he has no intention of resigning from his post, as the vast majority of his conference backs him. And once again, House Democrats, a rare move. They didn't do this for Kevin McCarthy. Democrats could have saved Kevin McCarthy. They did not. But Hakeem Jeffries and House Democrats have said already this week, yesterday, in fact, that they will kill any effort from Marjorie Taylor Greene to oust him from his speakership. So Democrats will be the cavalry that comes to the rescue. You know from the numbers in the House The Speaker Johnson can't afford to lose. He can't afford to have more than two or three defections, given the narrow margin of victory they have in the House. He can't afford to lose more than two or three people, so that Democrats may very well have to come to the rescue to save Speaker Johnson. And isn't that funny that Democrats, Hakeem Jeffries and his conference, would be saving this House Republican Speaker? But they'd rather do that at this point than to have a long vacancy again as we go through some more rigmarole, another circus, to get another speaker elected. So there's the breaking news of the hour. Marjorie Taylor Greene has said she will call for that vote next week. Democrats saying it ain't going to happen. And if we have to come to his rescue to save the business, or doing business in the House, we will do so. More when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.
What's your quarrel with the world? You're listening to Tavis Smiley. Let's get back to more of Tavis Smiley right now.
I was just talking to my producer, Faraji, about where this story is headed. So Marjorie Taylor Greene, again, has now said she will have this vote. She's calling for this vote next week to oust the Speaker, Mike Johnson. Hakeem Jeffries and the Democrats have already said they will come to his rescue. As I said moments ago, they could have done that for Kevin McCarthy to save his speakership. They did not. They've gotten some cooperation out of Johnson on Ukraine aid and Israel aid and a few other things that matter to them. So they've made the decision already and announced publicly, Hakeem Jeffries, that they, if they are required to, if Mike Johnson needs a few Democratic votes to hold on to his speakership, they will do that rather than see the House plunge once again into the abyss, and we end up going weeks without anything getting done and have to watch another circus as Republicans try to elect another speaker to whom they will do this again somewhere down the road because of this narrow margin of victory inside the House. And so I think this is the right move by Hakeem Jeffries and the Democrats to keep us again from sinking into the abyss. I think it's the right move. But I would also tell you this, as Faraji and I were just discussing off air, that this is going to embolden Marjorie Taylor Greene. It will embolden Matt Gaetz. It will embolden those MAGA Republicans, not just in the House, but indeed around the country. And they are going to start accusing, now with some credibility, Mike Johnson of being in bed with the Democrats. I mean, if it turns out that he can't hold on to the speakership without Democratic votes, you see the narrative, right? When you're only there because of the Democrats, and that's going to drive the MAGA Republicans even more crazy. So you can already see where this story is going to head into next week. If Democrats have to come to the rescue of Mike Johnson. So I'm already bracing myself to be covering that topic next week, but they're going to go in on him if he requires some Democratic votes to hold on to his speakership. Let me close this hour. I mentioned in the first hour, let me close this hour once again by thanking those new stations, almost a dozen new stations today. We are thankful for picking up this program. In Milwaukee, we thank WNOV, 860 AM, 106.5 FM. In Detroit, we thank WGPR, 107.5. In Orlando, Florida, we thank WHPB, 98.5 FM. In Muskegon, WUVS, LP, 103.7 FM. In Montgomery, Alabama, WUMO, 94.5. In Natchez, Mississippi, WMIS, 1240 AM. In Jonesboro, Arkansas, KLEK, 102.5 FM. In Albuquerque, New Mexico, never thought I'd be heard in Albuquerque, but we are, and I'm glad about it, KMGG, 99.9 FM. In Benton Harbor, Michigan, WVBH, 105.3. In Marshall, Texas, KBWC, 91.1. In Flint, Michigan, WFOV, 92.1 FM. That's a lot of stations, almost a dozen. So if you go to any of our platforms, any of my platforms, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, any of my platforms, you'll see all of these stations. If you know people in Milwaukee, Detroit, Orlando, Muskegon, Montgomery, Natchez, Jonesboro, Albuquerque, Benton Harbor, Marshall, and Flint, if you have friends there, you have family there, let them know that the Tavis Smiley Show is coming to their town, and they can check us out every day just as you do. And for that, I am grateful. When we come forward in our third and final hour, two conversations, we will commence with America's most visible death doula, Alua Arthur, to talk about how reframing our perspectives on death can help us lead better and more fulfilling and authentic lives. Look forward to that conversation. And then on the B side of hour three, we will talk with inclusion strategist Amber Cabral, on teaching people to be good humans. How about that part? Just being good humans and thereby allowing us to shift the narrative on DEI. One last hour left, two great conversations when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.